Kia ora, I'm Madison Reedy. Welcome to Life in the Fast Lane. New Zealand businesses are a resilient bunch. They've weathered numerous crises, the GFC, earthquakes, and now COVID-19. For the past 20 years, the Deloitte Fast 50 has championed those business owners who've not only survived, but thrived, honouring businesses that have achieved often unbelievable annual revenue growth. So what's their secret to success? In this podcast, I'll be asking some of the country's most notable entrepreneurs how they did it and what to do when the going gets tough. This is Life in the Fast Lane. Mix together a beer connoisseur and a compulsive creative, and you get Joss Ruffle, one of three behind craft beer company Garage Project. From starting literally in a garage in Wellington in 2011, the company's outgrown itself a handful of times over the years and is now classed among the top 100 beers in the world. Their product is unlike any other, nor does it look like it. The eclectic artwork covering its cans can be found in the hands of beer lovers as far away as Norway and Sweden. Garage Project has been a front runner of the craft beer boom, topping the Deloitte Fast 50 Index in 2015 with 664% revenue growth. Well, welcome to you, Joss, to Life in the Fast Lane.
Cool, thank you.
664% revenue growth. What was actually behind that headline number?
A lot of hard work and a huge number of beers, actually. You know, we've always been a very prolific brewery. And especially in those first few years, we were just quite relentless. Non-stop work for several years. People really responding to what we were doing. I think it being quite different at the time to what people had had before for beer. I think it all sort of just came together. And then definitely a bit of luck that there was no software company with thousands of percentages of growth that year.
Yeah, absolutely. What sort of sacrifices did you have to make in those first few years when you were starting up Garage Project?
It was a lot. So Pete and myself always took the attitude early on that you needed to be committed. You know, I think a lot of people maybe talk about starting that business or having that idea. And there's a saying I always really like that, you know, when it comes to breakfast, the chicken has an interest, but the pig is committed. And you need to be sort of committed. You need to be all in. So to that point, when we started, Pete quit his job in Australia where he was brewing at the time, sold his house, moved his family to Wellington. I quit my job and we were sort of all in at that point. We wanted to start in a way that we hoped would be remarkable and that people would pay attention to. So we decided to start brewing on a tiny level because it was all we could really afford from an equipment perspective. But by having such small equipment, we could take risks and maybe be a bit more daring than we would if we were brewing thousands of litres at a time. So we started at a scale that was just not commercially viable at all, just making 50 litres at a time. And that's what we did the 24-24 on, brewing and releasing 24 different beers in 24 weeks. But, you know, you can't make money selling, what, less than one keg of beer a week?
Especially when you're drinking a lot of it too, right?
We actually, as we sort of got into it, the first few batches we realised we had to really pull back on the amount that we would take off for samples and just normal tests that you would run in the brewing process. Every litre was precious at that point. We ended up the year with, I think, some good momentum, some interest behind what we're doing, and completely flat broke.
When you started and you were brewing, you know, at small scale of 50 litres, was there always an intention that you would eventually sell at a massive scale?
We've always sort of thought, I guess, just always looking for the next step. And for us at that time, it was very much, let's scale up to our own proper production brewery. But we didn't have strong growth aspirations beyond that. I think we felt if we could get to that level, it would be successful. And we really, really underestimated the demand or what the support for what we were doing would be. And we definitely found ourselves sort of scrambling a little to think about how we would actually cope with the demand and keep up.
Yeah, what sort of things were you all unprepared for when you were on that growth trajectory?
I think it's just almost the exponential complexity that comes as you scale up. I think it's very easy, especially, you know, we are essentially a manufacturing business, so we need physical equipment to be able to produce more of the beer. And it is always quite easy to see if we just add one more fermenter, we could increase our capacity and it would just be a linear step. But it's never a linear step in hindsight. And you're sort of constantly just having to learn on the fly how to adapt to that new level that you've suddenly got up to.
Would you recommend working with mates?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I think it's been fantastic, you know, having Ian and Pete. You know, Ian and I literally never not knowing each other, grew up together 3 months apart. And, you know, Pete's 10 years older than us, so he used to actually babysit us. And
does he still do that sometimes, well, on a night out maybe?
Yeah, hopefully not too often. You know, it's been phenomenal going on that journey with friends. And then I guess it always brings back a level of respect as well to what we're doing. And it just makes it all that more special as well when we have good successes.
Do you think that Garage Project would have been as successful as it is without the close relationship that the three of you have?
I couldn't sort of even imagine it without Ian and Pete. We all bring very different skills to the table. And it's just proven to be a phenomenal creative partnership, a great team. I guess from a business sense, having that foundation, getting that right team in place is so critical. And we're just very lucky, I think, having all those sort of complementary skills. And we didn't even really appreciate that or go into that with any planning at the start. It has just happened.
The three of you have had some pretty wild ideas over the years. I mean, ants and bears and seaweed and beer? Why?
Why not, I think, is... maybe a better question. You know, I think for us, beer has always been something that has drawn from the local hedgerow, the local surrounding areas. It's always been something that's actually been more than just the base ingredients of water, malt, hops, and yeast. I think we went through a phase of consolidation in the sort of 70s, 80s, big macro beer sort of really homogenized down the message of what beer is, and it became this bland, boring, bitter, fizzy drink, whereas it can be so much more than that. And I think we're just trying to go back in some ways to some traditions. Not all the traditions we've gone to are ones that maybe we want to carry on. We were once asked to make a cock ale using a hen, which is a very traditional recipe from, I think it was sort of 1800s or so. You know, the beer was interesting, but it's definitely not going to be one that will reach a wide audience. But, you know, other beers like the one with seaweed, we're actually trying to look to maybe sort more sort of cooking, culinary inspirations and bring flavors like umami in that particular instance. Or we might want to bring something that's maybe a bit more sweet or sour, spicy. And I think when you give people an experience of a beer that's not just that bland, bitter flavor that they thought beer was, it really opens up their mind to what it could be. And then you sort of have someone get really engaged with what you're doing. So that's the idea behind it.
You touched on consolidation there, and I'm definitely keen to talk with you about that a little bit later on in the episode. But specifically on Garage Project's ideas, how many of them don't actually make it to the shelf?
We always, for certain ideas, develop them. And sometimes they don't just work for a particular reason, but we always learn something from that. Just as much as if we have, I guess, happy accidents, you know, unexpected results come out of those as well. But, you know, we're totally willing to try something knowing that it might not work, very much in particular around our live presentation and serving of beers in different ways. We try a number of ideas that just flat out don't work. And then when it comes to the brewing of beers, if it looks good on paper, and I guess the collective experience that Pete and the team have, you know, they've worked with so many ingredients and so many special adjuncts and different processes and techniques. You know, if they're confident that something's shaping up well on paper, we're pretty sure it'll end up that way in the glass.
I mean, do you really care if an idea actually works, or is it more about just proving that you have no limits?
You know, I think we are very conscious of not doing, I think, what we call stunt beers. So we won't put something into a beer unless we think it will add an actual flavor. So the example of the ants, they're lemongrass ants from a company down in Christchurch called the Ant Eater, who provide edible insects to high-end restaurants. And they actually impart a very unique, powerful lemongrass flavor to the beer.
Here I was just thinking of, you know, your good old garden ant or something. Yeah. There's a lot more to it than that, it seems.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, I think it is important for us that if we're putting something into a beer and an adjunct, it's got a reason for being there.
Is there such a thing as having too many ideas on the table at once?
Yeah, I would say that you can get into that situation where, you know, you have so many concepts that you're working on or developing, and if you really want to see one get traction, you need to focus in on it. And we're definitely guilty of that. We, I want to say, easily distracted, but we are very curious, and so we're constantly pulling on lots of threads And I think sometimes we do find ourselves trying to step back a little, maybe not innovate too much in one particular area all at once.
How do you sort of find that balance between idea and actual execution?
It is generally the ideas that we get most excited about, we put the most energy into. And I think we always feel that if we are excited by it, our audience and the people drinking our beers will pick up on that, and hopefully they will be really excited by it as well. And that's kind of the guiding principle. I think when we do things that we genuinely are interested in and care about, we get great results. And I think the times where you maybe try and make something for a particular audience or opportunity that's been identified, that's maybe when you get things that aren't always such a great result.
In the case of your turbine beer that you made with Meridian, they initially said no to letting you use power from their wind turbines in Wellington to produce it. Do you often come up against denial and find yourself having to convince people that something actually could be a good idea?
Absolutely. You know, I think someone saying no, maybe they need a bit more context, or maybe, you know, we just need to show that we are really excited by this idea and that would work with them on it to sort of help overcome maybe some barriers within their organization or company. I do think for us, no is almost a signal to keep going, or I guess rules are there to be broken. It's always more interesting when you're doing something completely new, giving people a completely new experience. And if it was easy, everyone would be doing it is something we say a lot as well. And I think it's those opportunities that take that extra level of commitment and work to think your way around a problem that give you the greatest reward ultimately.
Now, I hate to bring up age here, but Garage Project is coming up 10 years. Can you really teach an old dog new tricks?
It's interesting when it comes to age in breweries. We are in some light now becoming not a complete startup, not a complete new brewery. There are new breweries coming along. But even within craft, you know, we're still very young. We've been fortunate enough to brew beers with the likes of Sierra Nevada that is, you know, coming up to 40 years old and still run by a very passionate founder, Ken Grossman. And then we've also had collaboration brews and worked with breweries out of Europe, like Bitburger, which is a seventh generation family-owned brewery. Brewing is one of the oldest industries in the world. There's a brewery next year or the year after, it's about to celebrate its 1,000th anniversary of continuous brewing. So in some ways, we are no longer the new kids on the block, but we've definitely got a long way to go yet, I think.
A decade in, though, do you find that it's more of an effort or more difficult to adapt and innovate, or is it still just as easy as it was on day one?
You know, I think if anything, I don't want to say it's easier, but it feels like we have a stronger platform to work from. Outrageous ideas maybe seem a little bit more achievable. And, you know, we have some momentum behind us. You know, in the early days, if we called up about something, it's like, you know, hey, it's Joss from Garage Project and no one's heard of you. Whereas now, if we get on the phone to someone, there's a good chance they've actually heard of the brewery, they've tried the beers, they're, you know, possibly excited to work with us. So in that capacity, yeah, I don't want to say it's getting easier, but it's not getting harder.
That certainly makes sense. How much attention do you pay to what your competitors are doing?
Not a huge deal. You know, we obviously aware of what's happening in the industry, but, you know, I think we always try to focus in very much on what we're doing because it is quite different to other breweries. We really, at the end of the day, view our competition as bad beer, and bad beer can come from anyone and anywhere. If someone has a bad beer, that's not going to give them a good experience, especially with craft. That's not good for us. I see that as a competitor. But if someone has a phenomenal beer from any other brewery, it raises up craft beer in that person's mind. And they're our friend, they're, you know, they're helping, and that's fantastic.
You have a pretty interesting background yourself. You actually come from a gaming background. Has that helped or hindered your ideas and innovation with Garage Project?
I think it's definitely helped. You know, we maybe in the startup of the brewery thought about developing it in the same way we might develop a video game in terms of prototyping, rapid iteration testing, we'd call it. So I think in the games terminology, it'd be finding the fun at a very, very low level of risk, very low level of investment. If something's fun with very pared back graphics, you can then pile on the polish and it's still going to be fun. But if it's not fun at that level, you can put all the polish in the world and it's not going to work. I think, you know, the 24-24, it was very much along that idea of let's find the fun at a low level before we put millions of dollars of stainless steel on the floor. Yeah, I think there's been a lot for games industry that I've taken and digital entertainment back into what we're doing, because ultimately we make beer and beer should be fun. It is fun. We don't want to take it too seriously.
Since you'd never worked in the craft beer industry before this, what were some of the surprising challenges that came with it?
The main difference and change was going from working with essentially a digital product to a physical good. In the games world, particularly towards the end of my career, we were very heavily involved in iPhone and App Store development. You know, we had apps sitting number one on the US App Store for free apps, getting hundreds of thousands of downloads a day. You know, the difference at that point between hundreds of thousands of downloads a day or one download a day, there was no impact from us. Whereas as a brewery develops, it's very much about adding more equipment. If you want to keep going, you need to increase your brew house size, your fermenter size, your packaging line.
You have to grow with your demand effectively.
Yes.
COVID-19 has thrown quite the spanner in the works for the hospitality industry. Can you talk me through what's happening in that industry at the moment?
We see across the industry that we're involved with in terms of restaurants and bars and cafes, you know, it has been extremely challenging. A lot of uncertainty, especially as we came into the first lockdown, what that would actually mean. And I think maybe the best way to describe it from what we've seen is just an absolute roller coaster ride. You know, some really low moments, and then for some customers of ours, fortunately, some really high moments of just huge levels of demand outside of lockdown. And then the second lockdown, plummeting back down to that low, low level. You know, I think everyone's just hoping for, looking for a bit of consistency and normality. But yeah, just a complete roller coaster ride.
For sure, that's probably a kind way to put it for many as well. How has it impacted Garage Project?
Yeah, it's been, again, in some areas it's been challenging, and then other areas it's, I think we've come through it stronger than what we were expecting at the very outset. You know, we've seen a huge response around our online channels, people jumping online and buying beer directly from the brewery, which has been fantastic. Even the retail channels, the supermarkets and specialty bottle shops have been really resilient for us as well. And then the restaurants, when they've been able to actually sell, and the bars, when they've actually been able to have people come through, you know, it's been really encouraging there as well. But yeah, it's been a tough year for sure.
Can you draw any comparisons with how tough this year has been with any other challenges that Garage Project has faced, or is COVID basically off the charts?
Easily the most challenging year we've had as a company. But, you know, we've got a very strong, very capable team, and they've, I think, through this have really pulled together, which has been phenomenal to see. You know, I think we've seen people really grow this year. You know, there's been a lot of uncertainty, but I think we've definitely seen that if we come together as a team, we can overcome challenges even as large as COVID.
Yeah, you told me when we spoke not so long ago about how you gave your staff a wage cut, but then you backpaid them all when you found out that you financially could. Can you talk me through how you made that decision?
You know, I think we had a lot of uncertainty as lockdown was coming in, and early on we took an approach that would sort of be all for one, one for all. We'd do the best we could to keep our entire crew on, and the most effective way to ensure that was for everyone across the board to drop down to 80% of regular pay. We did have people at the brewery and sort of people who could not work from home and were at slightly greater levels of risk at a 90% level of pay. But, you know, we managed to get through lockdown, and then the sort of resulting period out of lockdown definitely exceeded our expectations. You know, so it was a fairly significant amount, but it was easily the right thing to do. You know, the crew pulled together, made that sacrifice, and then we were able to back pay the sacrifice they'd made, so everyone was on 100% pay throughout the year.
A very brave decision, that's for sure. Well, people have certainly still been drinking in quarantine. There's no doubt about that. What do you think has fueled this huge boom in craft beer's popularity?
You know, I think we know that generally alcohol consumption is decreasing, and I think we're just seeing a trend towards people preferring to enjoy maybe smaller amounts of higher quality things. And maybe that's across the board as well. You might be having better made local chips like proper crisps, or even some of your daily purchases around even like Fix and Fog peanut butter versus, you know, Sanitarium. And I think craft has sort of definitely benefited from that trend, and then people's just excitement around trying new and interesting flavors. And then, you know, when you have a craft beer that's unlike anything you've had before, or the quality is just phenomenal, it's all you want to drink. It's very hard to go back when you have something that's got amazing hop aroma and a delicious flavor to it, and people be prepared to spend a little more, drink a little less, but really enjoy it.
Coming back to consolidation, which you mentioned before, takeovers are becoming the norm in the craft beer industry. Lion bought Panhead and Emerson's, DB bought Tuatara. What do you make of the big guys buying up the little guys?
Well, they're obviously feeling threatened or feeling a need to respond to, I guess, declining market share. So as we just touched on, big beer, macro beer volumes are declining. We have a new younger generation coming through who have only known craft beer, and they're not going to go drink the beer of their dads or their granddads. And those sort of traditional parochial sort of loyalty structures, I think, are out the window when it comes to beer. And so I guess it's the big guys responding to that.
How do you think it's changed your industry?
You know, it's made it, I think, incredibly competitive. And there's certainly some practices in New Zealand in particular that in other countries like America are considered anti-competitive and are illegal. So I think it does make it harder for smaller breweries to get going. It does put a crunch on the available shelf space and the number of taps and bars. And I think it does add a layer of confusion as well when people aren't quite aware what they're drinking in terms of the actual parent owner of that beer.
Yeah, I was definitely keen to ask you about that, as to whether or not it actually hurts the reputation of those few standing independent craft beers like Garage Project, because people who think that they're drinking something boutique could be turned off when they find out that it's actually really owned by one of these big beverage giants.
I think so. You know, we always want authenticity and credibility to be a key feature of what we do, that the beer comes from a place, that there's real people behind it. I think the other thing as well is in terms of the economic impact and driving the industry forward, craft breweries represent the jobs in the industry. We, for better or worse, do not have the high levels of automation and scale. You know, so there's some phenomenal statistics out there. You know, the craft industry in America is sort of mid 20% market share now, but they're well into 60% of the brewing jobs in America. They just really over-index in terms of the number of people being employed to produce the beer they do. You know, I think when you're supporting a, relatively speaking, smaller independent craft brewery, you're supporting a lot of jobs underneath that.
I'm going to ask this question anyway, even though I'm guessing it's going to be a big fat no. Would you ever sell to the big guys?
We've always said to that, like, you never say never, but, you know, we're quite happy on the path that we are on at the moment. We like operating as an independent brewery, an independent company. It suits us. No plans to change that.
They're offering a lot of money, though. Is it not tempting? I mean, previous deals have been worth millions of bucks.
We take satisfaction out of what we do in lots of areas. I think if you ask Pete, he just wants to brew for the rest of his life. He loves brewing. He's not interested in huge amounts of cash, and we're more interested in doing what we do day to day.
Keeping on the topic of money, how have you funded Garage Project's growth so far?
We got to the end of our 2024 phase with some encouraging momentum behind us, but also flat broke. We went out at that point and did a very small raise of, I guess, friends, families and fools, you'd say, is the classic line. We had a small group of people that we'd been asking for advice along the way. People had really respected their views on what we're doing. And, you know, they sort of swung from thinking originally it wasn't a great idea what we're doing to, I think, falling in love with it a little and seeing the passion Pete and I were putting into it. We took on a small round from five individuals in the very end of 2011, and we've funded the company entirely out of cash flow and debt since then.
When cash was, or may even still be, a bit tight, where do you decide where to and where not to spend it?
It's always pretty easy. If it's going to impact the beer quality, it's a no-go. If it's a luxury or a nice to have or something we can live without, then it starts to become a little easier. I think also, you know, we have a number of those pet projects and maybe, you know, you really want to do that little side project, but now's not the right time. Or we really want to get in another collection of barrels to age some beer in, but maybe we just need to wait a month or wait 6 weeks and time it, wait till the timing's appropriate before we can do that. But fundamental quality, we wouldn't make any decisions that could impact that.
Amazing. Well, thank you, Josh, so much for joining us on the Life in the Fast Lane podcast. I've learned a lot from you. I think most importantly was your sort of overriding trend of passion over profit with everything that you guys do at Garage Project. And I also loved your quote that rules are there to be broken. I think we can all take something from that one. I just have one last question for you. Could you please finish this sentence for me? For your business to survive and thrive, you need?
Great people.
Thank you. That was Joss Ruffle, co-founder of independent craft brewer Garage Project, also joined by the beautiful Tui's in the background of his home in Wellington. Thank you for listening to Life in the Fast Lane, brought to you by the Deloitte Fast 50, championing New Zealand businesses for the past 20 years.